that nightclub at the end of the world. We are again in session. You're on the Lifeboat Hour on PRN. We're going to have some fun tonight. We're going to approach a left brain problem from the right brain tonight. And we're going to have some fun with that. It's been a lot of developments going on. I like what Gary was talking about in the show before about consciousness. And for me, with the whole issue of building lifeboats to escape the wreckage of the Titanic, you know, the sinking thing of industrial civilization, woohoo, that part of the lifeboat, as people like I and Carolyn Baker and Charles Eisenstein and have been talking, we've been so strongly emphasizing that incorporating some form of spirituality and emotional health into that preparation is essential. And what Gary was alluding to right before the show came on, or a point that he brought up, was that many of us are choosing to live in that consciousness now, and we are able to do so. And it's a process of changing what's going on inside your head and how you react to the world outside. My left brain made it very clear that the world outside as we know it, as analyzed, approached, viewed, or tried to be digested by the left brain, is toxic. It's not livable. It's not survivable. Follow the rules and you die. But living the other way, living in the lifeboat, is and living as in that consciousness is amazing. It's the middle of summer, and I am now alone on this property for the time being, and I'm caring for all of our crops by myself every day at the height of food growing season. It's about 5 hours of work outside in the day, but I see all this food coming up, and it's doing amazing things for the way I feel, and also for the experiences that I have. We'll talk more about that. But that's what I'm doing now, and I'm living that life, and it does change your consciousness, and that's what the 100th Monkey was all about. So let's catch up on a couple of important things. Rodney King was found dead yesterday, bottom of a swimming pool in Los Angeles, or, you know, in the San Gabriel Valley, I guess. And, that was 20 years ago, and at the time I was the press spokesman for the Perot presidential campaign in Los Angeles County when the verdicts came in. And on that case, I remember I was holding a press conference at Perot headquarters on Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks, and the verdicts came in right in the middle of this press conference, and we were the biggest story in the news until the verdicts came in. And I had a meeting that night as the city started to go up in flames with some crazy composer guy who was going to have this festival for Ross Perot and fly Whitney Houston in dangling from a helicopter. But we were at this restaurant on Highland near Sunset that was rotating. And we could look down on the city, and like every rotation around, the fires were getting a mile closer. And it was like when the fires were within four blocks, this guy who was oblivious, I just said, "I'm leaving, goodbye." I don't know what happened to him, but those were amazing times, and we did not learn much from Rodney King. Can we all just get along? It was a great tragedy, and when I saw that beating, I was ashamed to have worn that uniform at one time. But LAPD was schizophrenic, as was all of our civilization, and all of that schizophrenia, that disconnection, is now coming home to roost. So I made this amazing Facebook posting this week that started this huge dialogue on my personal Facebook page. The post said, "Atheism, the belief that there was once absolutely nothing, and nothing happened to the nothing, and until nothing happened, magically exploded for no reason, creating everything and everywhere. Then a bunch of the exploded everything magically rearranged itself for no reason whatsoever into self-replicating bits, which then turned into dinosaurs. And they mock your beliefs." Well, Jesus, did that unlock? You should have seen the dialogue. But what was so clear was the inability of most of the posters to really understand what they were talking about. It distilled down to people didn't understand the difference between the word atheist, which means non-God. It's an absolute position, saying there is no God. And agnostic, meaning not know, which means I don't know. There could be, but I don't know. But so many people have been, there's a great post that came from my friend Joe Two Trees, and that kind of summed everything up, because if, as you've been following the show, you know that the world is starting to look for a spiritual as opposed to religious answer, something other than the 3D world we live in with Cartesian dominance. But Joe Two Trees wrote on Facebook, this was a great post, "Great discussion, thank you all. I think we all want to achieve harmony, and when we achieve harmony with the world around us, we will have all our answers to these questions, and then we will learn that the answers were just a path to achieving harmony with the world around us in the first place. It is an infinite loop in itself, which we can step out of should we choose to do so, and hopefully we'll step back into. It is at that point, when we step out of it, that we become unnatural and no longer like a beaver, but more like a dam. But be sure that evolution did have good intentions when it gave us consciousness and when consciousness gave us logic. That is what is ingrained in our DNA that forces some of us to join forces and reject the unnatural thoughts and ways that have been forced upon us and is leading to collapse. I believe many of you are so traumatized by religion that you reject everything that cannot be explained by science and logic. It is understandable. Religion has been horrible. But those who actually study, live, and feel the way of life, be they scientist, religious, or other, are all seeking and living in the same thing, just calling it something different." That was from my friend Joe Two Trees. Facebook has its really bright moments, and I want to thank him for posting that comment. So, catching up, you know, paying token homage to the carnage that's occurring in the world outside, it's continual. It's getting worse. Next week could well be the end of the euro. There's bank runs all over Europe. But I see changes in consciousness, and I see this happening because The Independent ran a major story this week. And the headline was, "Population growth and overconsumption could have potentially catastrophic implications for human well-being." Duh. And what about the well-being of everything else that lives around here on this same little piece of universe that we inhabit together? We're having a tornado hit Venice, Italy. They had a 6-point-something off the east coast of Japan, and volcanoes are going off in Indonesia. Mother Earth is rearranging her clothing. And there will be those of us prepared to go along with that ride and will fit comfortably into the new arrangement, and there will be those who don't. One way to look at it. They had a bizarre ice storm in Donegal, Ireland this week in June. Winter-like scene. It's like, yeah, the lights are going on, but the change is happening with or without our consciousness, or with or without our permission. There are many different ways to look at this, and quite often how you look at things is what makes all the difference in the world, how you see them. I had this amazing party at my house last night here in Sevastopol. It was, Mike Rupert picks the hottest day of the year to barbecue. I had to spend 4 or 5 hours watering. It was 100 and bazillion degrees outside. And we had about 30 people come over. The most beautiful sunset I think I've seen in 10 years. Joining us at the barbecue last night was my good friend Diane Patterson. And you all know, if you've been listening to this show, that I have been been playing her music frequently on this show, and I have to look for a little quote that I pulled up. I'm gonna have to go pull this up. I got to do a tap dance here. This is improvising on live radio. But Diane showed up, but just by a strange series of coincidences, the day before I was walking out of the market, I heard this great Native American flute. It just grabbed me by the shirt. And I turn around, there's a guy named Albert Tenaya, who was a descendant of Chief Tenaya of the Yosemite people playing. He just felt led to do that, so I invited him to the party, and he wound up playing with Diane, and we had some mandolins show up, and it was amazing stuff. So Diane was here, and we were just celebrating this. I am stalling. This is actually what I'm doing. I am stalling because I'm trying to pull up this email because it's the perfect setup for Diane, and I thought I had put it in there. Okay, so on Facebook, Josh Clark, after having listened to High Sierra Morning, I must have played it 6 or 7 times. The song really gets to you. He writes and posts on Facebook. He says, "You need to stop or play more High Sierra Mornings on the show. I listen to you at work, and that song makes me tear up. Everyone looks at me strange, then I have to explain myself, and I discover that I actually work with many enlightened humans who are all like me, looking for a way out while trying not to stick out and make a target of themselves. Ah, that was an amazing that was an amazing piece of mail, but that song does resonate in the heart, and we're at the point where we will choose whether we live in the heart of the head, from the heart of the head. And so I asked Diane if she would be kind enough to join us for the radio show tonight, and she's sitting here right across from me in our nightclub at the end of the world. Diane Patterson, say hello to everybody on the Lifeboat Hour.
Greetings, Michael, and blessings to all your listeners.
Oh, man. There are some powerful messages in your song, but what I'm aware of, because I stay sensitive to the mail, is that your songs touch people and make them feel good, and make them feel, it actually probably reminds many that they have those feelings inside. And I've played High Sierra Mornings many times. I've played Sacred Sound, and they're all from your CD, World Awake. Now, how many CDs do you have?
I have about 3 that I've published.
Okay, and you're working on something new now?
I am.
Yeah, look at the smile on your face. What are you working on?
I'm working on a CD called Build a Bridge, inspired by my song, Holy Land, that all the lands are holy, not just the ones that we refer to as the Holy Land.
Oh, you sneaky person. What is the central drive of your music? What's in your heart? What is your music seems to be thematically so utterly consistent. What's it consistent with? Where's that coming from?
You know, I'm still doing it because people continue to come to me and say that my songs have moved them and changed them in some way and inspired them to change their lives, become more conscious, come out of their hearts instead of their heads.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am about 20 years later, still on my grassroots path of sharing my songs.
Now, you travel a lot. You spend a lot of time in Hawaii and a lot of time here. You're touring right now?
Yeah. Yes.
What's up for you?
Coming up, July is full of festivals, Oregon Country Fair, an incredible event on July 4th called Evolutionary 4th with Human and the Human Revolution, who's doing a GMO labeling campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can know what's in our food.
That's a good idea. Of course, I know what's in mine here because we grow a lot of it, but that's always a good thing. I asked you because I have a little experience of being a songwriter, too, and I sometimes wonder where the words come from and where the feelings come from. And I'm often not aware even. I'm grateful. I'm always grateful that I received the song or that, you know, that it like travels through me, but I'm often not aware. But some of your stuff is, what does it feel like to write a song?
I'm always amazed and grateful that yet another amazing song has come through. It's rather mysterious, actually. And there's no set pattern.
No. I mean, for me, a lot of it's been like sausage making sometimes. You go and you're sitting with a group, and somebody's got some chord, and somebody's got a track, and somebody's got some... And you all kind of squawk and... And you... That's the sausage making, but somehow a melody emerges out of that. But then there's other times when it just comes clear and straight. How did High Sierra Morning come to you?
That one came right through. And I actually did a solo camp out to catch songs.
Mm-hmm.
I did 2 nights on a friend's land in the Sierra foothills. And this was about 2005, I think, the year that I wrote that song. And I was dreaming and listening and in my little moon lodge for those days, and nothing really was coming through. And then in the last hour, when I was actually packing all my gear into the wheelbarrow and getting ready to go back to civilization, that the song started to come through. And I was writing a little and packing a little and writing a little. And then the dragonfly came and landed on my toe.
That's perfect.
Yeah, so he's the one that said, and this could be a good time, and that's from the Hopi man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought there is magic in this. And again, remembering and acknowledge my left brain career as an investigative journalist and a guy who puts the pieces together. Not only I, but a great many people now are concluding that the level of consciousness that much of mankind lives in is totally inadequate to dealing with the situation. And there's a hunger and there is a thirst. And there are so many of us who walk the path like you and I do, Diane, who are adamant about this is not about religion. This is not about anything man created. This is not about learning anything new, but rather about remembering things that our ancestors knew. I gave a speech at in Grass Valley up near Nevada City in May of last year, and I coined the term post-petroleum human, and basically what I said very clearly is, first of all, the God of Abraham's full of crap, because we don't, it's dominion that separates, and it's dominion that has to be dissolved. But what I said up there clearly was that our ancestors knew how to live. Nobody sent them to school or made them read a book. It was in the DNA. It was a part of an actual living experience. And the Bible was this thing we live on called Mother Earth.
Mm.
And so there's another one of your songs that I particularly like. It's called Esselin People, and it's spelled Esselin, right?
En.
Okay. Which is not, and I first heard that, and I thought, that must be for people who can spend $10,000 a week to go have really cool sex or something, you know. But it's not. What does the word Esselin mean? Where does it come from?
There's the Esselin Institute, which started in 1962, so they're having their 50th anniversary this year, which is a wonderful place to go and retreat and learn things and get in the holy healing water. The hot springs is amazing. And it's the land where the Esselin tribe, tribelets of people who traditionally lived on, historically lived on that land, would go for ceremony. And that piece of land is a burial ground. And because of that, it's an opportunity to connect and build that relationship that you were referring to that is way beyond religion, that is our own individual spirit connection to land and to ancestors and to the teachings that come from our elders that show us who we are and how to live and be good people.
For the benefit of you left brain inclined listeners, let me say that my left brain has concluded thoroughly that this is, living this way is the only way any of us stands a chance at all. And it worked. It worked for a long time before the so-called start of recorded history 6,000 years ago, which is when I believe a lot of stuff was hijacked. That's when money started to appear and fear started to appear. Mm. But this was a way that worked successfully for millions of years for human beings. And it was a way that was effortless and without conquest. So let's go ahead and play this incredible song, then we'll come back and talk about it here on the Lifeboat Hour. Cue the song.
Spirits to the sea, hands to the rocks, ocean, cave, cypress tree, living on a cliff on the edge of the world, otters in the mist. Up the holy healing water, the taka taka Esselin people, Esselin people, Esselin people, Esselin people, working on the land. On the ground, healing with a heart, healing with sound, signs of the soul open in our minds, stretching out our bones, place the cold. When I was soaking up the holy healing water, forever Esselin people, forever Esselin people. Spirit in the water, people.
Yeah. That was it. I don't. That was a great screaming, clapping in the background. But you did that here live last night, and it really does open up a channel of feeling and vibration inside you that connects you with stuff. And so when I talk about me, Mr. Left Brain, who's trained with special forces and all that stuff, says that the only thing my left brain mind tells me to do is that might work is live spiritually. That's the point. That's the point, and I think that's the point that that much of our species is reaching. And as if you've been following this show for a while, we've had Peter Joseph on, we've had quite a few people. It's become very clear that for many of us who have been out here trying to alert the world outside, it's the stop sign has gone up for us and said they've had all the warnings they're going to get. It's time to cast off and live in your lifeboats and to live from the heart, and that is something which more people doing. Kind of accelerates this great transformation that's taking place. Diane, you travel a lot, and you meet a lot of cool people.
Yeah.
And are you seeing a change out there in the world? Are you seeing an awakening taking place?
It's person to person. I don't usually play stadiums. And what I'm seeing at this grassroots level that I operate on is I am seeing people wake up and want to change. And want to, they're hungry for more of the kind of information that you're giving and more of the kind of art that brings us closer to the rhythms of life.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wants to, buy all of your songs all at once, how do they do that?
They can go on CD Baby or iTunes and find three albums.
I heartily recommend it, you're one of several... songwriters who just are have these permanent seats at the round table in my heart, my music heart. Mark Cohn's in there, and Sean Colvin's in there. And you and I went to see Sean Colvin together. That was a trip. That was fun.
Yeah.
And you're in there too. And that's a recognition. Now, even for the most left-brained of the people out there, who insist that they have to see facts and documentations and charts and graphs, they will all have to admit that there are some songs or some singers or some art that gets to their heart that they like. And I defy them to quantify in ones and zeros why it is they like that. That's called listening with your heart. And we have to learn how to speak that way also. We got about 4 or 5 minutes before we go to the station break, the bottom of the hour. We're going to try to weave some more of this web of survival and evolution after we come back from the break, and we will take your calls if you want to call in and talk to Diane about music. A lot of people, I know we got a lot of people who listen to Lifeboat Hour who are also good music fans, and many of my music friends listen frequently. And God, have I been blessed to know some awesome people and work. Because I'm an idiot savant. I don't play anything. I just put the heart and soul and waggle my vocal cords, but.
Well, speaking of musicians and playing music, I want to give shouts out to my good brothers that are on that cut you just heard of, Essel and People.
Oh, please.
Yeah, Al Torrey is celebrating his birthday today. He's playing the guitar, the funky lead guitar on that cut. It's a live track. And my brother Benjamin Farr is playing the didgeridoo on that track, and he's the one that brought me to Essel and the reason that I got to create a relationship with that land that brought me that song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's an amazing cut. Now all your stuff is just amazingly original, and you also I watched and listened. You are an amazing guitar player. What else do you play? Keyboards? Anything like that?
No, I do play ukulele.
Of course. Well, you spend half your time in Hawaii, right?
Yeah, I figured I finally picked that up after traveling to Hawaii for about 3 years.
You have a new song you're writing right now. What is it called? The Peaceful Warrior? No, the Lamp.
I'm working on the Lamp's from a couple years ago.
Okay.
I'm working on right now. My Occupy song is shaping up.
You played that last night. That was kind of cool. We had a few occupiers here. We had some really cool people here last night for that sundown. And people like Diane Patterson and me believe that a lot of that had to do with the fact that our consciousness helped to create that reality. And that's the point that I really want to drill in out there is, and this is why I'm so happy that I was relieved of, Spirit said you're done, that work of analyzing all the news and stuff that's out there, because if you live there, there are no answers. But that was a vital function for me. But I'm relieved of that now, and there is a major turning taking place, and we're all the beneficiaries of that. And so one of the things I want to weave into what we do here on the Lifeboat Hour is to weave in, even though these times are extremely challenging for most of the people in the world, for many of us who have labored long and hard on this field, these times are becoming ever more joyful by the day. And I know where the rest of my summer is. It's with my crops. And that makes my toes wiggle, in spite of the fact that it was 172,928 degrees outside yesterday. Okay, we are with Diane Patterson on the Lifeboat Hour. We're rolling up on a station break here on PRN-FM. We'll be back right after these messages. Is kind of what a lot of us are looking for right now. You know, one story caught my eye tonight. It's going to be up on the World News Desk at CollapseNet tomorrow. And by the way, hats off to Wes Miller, Luis Mora, John Barnes, everybody at CollapseNet. They're doing just a great job. They are redefining what CollapseNet does, and it's they're really filling an essential and unique niche out there. And I salute them. On the World News Desk tomorrow is a story. The cost of living in China now exceed the cost of living in the United States, which means China has arrived. I mean, the insanity of the way the infinite growth paradigm works is that it has had, and I believe that human beings have been raised and farmed as livestock for 6,000 or 7,000 years, as vehicles through which to extract the resources of this planet, which is now refusing to give any further. And the whole time, the hypnosis of the infinite growth paradigm and the media, which is obviously now losing its power as the mainstream media withers and just kind of shrivels on the vine, the hypnotism led everybody to believe that they would find happiness if they did something that they could look around and see was not producing happiness anywhere else. And this is like the end of an essay that I wrote called Global Corp many years ago, back in 2004, 2005, where I wrote that when the last CFO of the last giant corporation in the world, Global Corp, has swallowed everything, and the lights go out for humanity and the climate and Mother Earth and everything ends and dies, he'll be sitting there cheering, "Hooray, we did it." And the obvious, transparent insanity of that is just amazing. But listen, there's no shortage of insanity because Greece is just supposedly elected. We all understand that that's a farce anymore. A pro-bailout government. I mean, and they're cheering that because it was a victory over the fascists. the neo-Nazis. But when people begin to understand that the powers that be create the neo-Nazi fascists so that you can be scared of them, so that you can cheer when they give you the government that's going to stick it even deeper in parts of your body you don't want to talk about, you'll think that that's a benefit. But how transparently bogus to be celebrating, because Greece is, I mean, what bailout brought Greece was tragedy, death, suicide, unemployment, homelessness, social collapse, revolution, a little anarchy, and so they're cheering because they have something that is certain to give them more of the same. And when you hear some sane music like Diane Patterson's, it's kind of a relief, if nothing else. If you want to ask Diane Patterson a question, or you have any questions for me tonight, the number is 1-888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. Okay, we're going back to the show. Hi, Diane. Welcome back.
Aloha.
See, you just spread this joy around everywhere. You know what? People need that. And
yeah.
And it works. Where are you going next after you're done here in Northern Cal? What are you doing in Northern Cal?
I'm farming right now on my friend's land in Mendocino. Happy about it. It's a good grounding for me this month,
yeah.
when I'm off the road for a minute. And then I do Evolutionary Force also in Mendocino, that event. And then I'll head up to Oregon for Oregon Country Fair and Mystic Garden Gathering in the middle of the month.
And you're going up to Williams, Oregon, right?
I am. Yeah.
Williams is not far from Ashland. I had some bad times in Ashland, but there's some amazing people and stuff around there. But Williams has like the herb farm, which is like it's like five different climates converge in the same place. And they've got some old communes up there, don't they? They got some things that have been chugging along,
yeah,
since the late 60s.
A lot of good stuff. I'll be on July 8th. I'll be on Seven Seeds Farm, that's growing seeds, siskiyou seeds. And my friend Don Tipping started that spot. We'll have a Chautauqua and some permaculture teachings and all-day-long event with music and fire at night. This is my beautiful life.
Now, the whole idea, everybody, is that you can plug into this and you can start living this way yourself. You don't have to be as blessed as we are to be on good land with water and all that stuff. You can start to build this stuff in your heart and start celebrating it. And it is a way, because we've all been commenting on the horrible insanity that's out there in the world. Last week I did a show, Diane, and I talked about the fact that suicides in the U.S. military are up to one a day now. One a day. And there are ways to step out of that, which is what I was doing in last week's show also, when I was talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, and which basically says that a human sickness, and I call fear the great sickness. Whenever I'm afraid of anything, I am experiencing the great sickness, and I take that inside. I just recognize it immediately.
Yeah.
And that's the sickness which is coming to an end, because we've lived in a world that said essentially something like, okay, if I attack you with the rock, all of a sudden you figure out how to make a club, and then I figure out how to make a slingshot. And then you figure out how to make a sword or a spear, and then somebody figures out how to turn a spear into a bow and arrow. And we're living at the end result of that kind of thinking, not just from a military standpoint, but from the standpoint of consumption, because it's always based on fear. I'm going to be speaking at an heirloom seed convention here in Petaluma. They've asked me to speak, which I think is just an amazing honor. And one of the themes that I'm going to develop is that and I think this is very consistent with your music, too, is that heirloom seeds, the organic heirloom seeds, are so different from the Monsanto seeds. And here I come back to the fact that we live in a world of duality. That's this world that's coming to an end right now. The world is based upon fear. But when you get a GMO seed that's engineered to protect against pests or to be more productive or to protect against droughts or to, you know, whatever, what you're doing is you're genetically engineering fear right into seed.
Mm-hmm.
Right into the seed.
Yep, and worrying is praying for what you don't want.
Exactly. and so that's like super important. Let me just check. I got to shrink this and see if we've got anybody calling in. If that's the choice, either to live in fear or love, there's also a challenge in recognizing when you're afraid. So I think a lot of people react out of fear and don't even understand that.
Yeah, to recognize.
When they're doing it. You come from the heart. You're an artist. How would an artist approach a situation like that, a songwriter?
What I'm thinking about now is you are what you eat.
Yeah.
And, you know, that goes for the food, and it goes for the media and the thoughts and the people that we surround us, ourselves with. And I think we're really fortunate to have a lot of really creative people doing great stuff and, you know, the opportunity to go online and or go to the natural food store and look at the board and look at some juicy stuff and go to it and see what's happening out there and surround ourselves with positive projects that we can just observe for inspiration or plug into and get our hands dirty and start to grow food and make compost and feel grounded and have something to do that is going to always reward us and bring us peace.
Now, you share something which is important, which is part of the spiritual life that I live and try to cultivate, which is very difficult doing living the way I was and until I was relieved of my post. But you don't have a car, yet you get around every place you need to go. and that is an approach to supply from a love-based place rather than a fear-based place. But there's also...
Yeah.
There's also, you and I both believe that we can be co-creators of our reality.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel good about not having a car, and I don't have a place that I live either. And it's odd for a traveler maybe to not have a car, and what it does is it makes me buy tickets on the trust train. All the time.
Tickets on the trust train, that's a
lie.
You
know, and you know, and I read the I Ching every day, and the I Ching tells me to always put great spirit in the middle of every relation that I have in this life. And the more I can remember that spirit's in charge of what kind of ride I get and how direct it is and how good the vibes are, and, you know, the more, the better it is. And that's what, it keeps me tapped in, just putting myself out there a little bit and not having my ducks all lined up. Helps me to remember to give thanks for how good everything's working out for me in my life and my music, and things are moving forward, and it's simple, you know, and it's not extravagant, and I feel good about that too, because guess what? Extravagant is using up the world's resources really fast, and there's a lot of cars, and there's a lot of people going places, and they love to take me along because I'm a positive person that's easy to travel with, and because I'm on a good path, and they love to help me get there.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, and this is so critical because, you know, I realized, of course, that I was not the only one getting messed with in my head by what's going on in the world. There's a lot of people out there who really don't have a clue yet.
Yeah.
As to what's going on. And
yeah.
But I could feel it also, and I have to remember in my approach, because what I was talking about in shows leading up to this is some people would say, Mike, you've gone all airy-fairy, now you're talking about spirit and stuff. I even mentioned UFOs. Hey, they really exist, you know. But not that I have a full explanation for that yet, I could not have accomplished the things that I have accomplished in my life. That would be Truth and Lies of 9/11 or Crossing the Rubicon from the Wilderness, the movie, all of that. That was all spirit. That was all spirit that enabled me to do that. And what's beautiful, like I'm coming back to again, is what an amazing thing when the art spirit side of you agrees with the intellectual side of you. And the suggestion is maybe that's the way it should be and the way it can be. It's called being unified. We have a caller, Philip from Phoenix. You're on. Hey, man.
Yeah, I had a question for Diane. I just wanted to hear more about the area in Hawaii that she spends time in. I understand it's kind of a sustainable, off-grid type area, and I guess it's on Maui. But anyway, I haven't really heard much at all about it, so I just was curious to hear the, you know, a little more details and her experience there and her life, what her life is like there. Thank you.
Great. Maui. Maui's a magical place. There's a lot of great people doing great things, and I tend to move around a lot. I particularly enjoy the wild, jungly side of Kipahulu, and there's not a whole lot to see in the way of commercial, touristic sort of things, and that doesn't sound like what you're looking for. There's little farms, there's little collectives, there's a lot of great activists doing great work. My greatest story, which I just have to tell, Maui.
Tell.
Is around Lieutenant Aaron Watada. When Aaron Watada, who at the time was, this was January of 2007, and he was asked to deploy his troops to Iraq, and he refused, and he went to the lefty press, he went to Democracy Now, and he went to Indy Media, and he said, the president is lying, and this is an illegal war, and in order to be true to my conscience, I can't take my troops there. And he was so eloquent, and he stood up, you know, and just said it really, really good in a really peaceful, really intelligent way for all of us. And we all got behind him. And he's a young man from Hawaii. And so I was there in Maui at the time, and we all organized and we put on a big event. And we, you know, our intention to raise money and consciousness and support for him. And we put the event on the eve of his court-martial date. You see, and so we were making... Really, we were making our intention just into the moment when he would go into court. And power of prayer, you know, that week, proceedings started on Monday, and by Wednesday it really fizzled out. There wasn't much left, and I think it was 9 months later that a federal judge ruled that just about every count the military had against Watada was invalid. So we were excited and felt good to come together. And I wrote a song for that event called Pele Protect Watada and got to work with Maui Peace Action and just a lot of the community rallied together. It's a magical place.
That story so reminds me of some friends of mine. I talk frequently about Skip Mayhawk, an elder of the Dakota Sioux who had been awarded the Medal of Honor for action in the Oshawa Valley in 1968 with 101st Airborne. And he showed up to be my second cameraman when I did. He was paying me a huge honor. He refused that decoration because he was fighting in an unjust war.
Oh, wow.
And he fought beside Russell Means at Wounded Knee.
Mm.
And I have another friend, Dennis Morisseau, who was the first U.S. Army officer to refuse to be deployed to Vietnam. And he won. He's a tank commander. I mean,
wow.
He was a, and so I have been blessed, and I guess I've lived consistent with that. But I've had this big question about what the role of honor is. And you write about peaceful warriors and how important honor is. And as you were saying that just now, I had this thought, because what's happening now, for many of us, we approach and absorb what's going on in terms of harmonics and frequencies. Changes of frequency is happening all over the planet. We can all feel that. But I believe that honor might be something that provides pure notes in the harmonies of spirit, so that everything can tune around that. It's like when you're in a band, you're on stage, somebody's got to play that note that everybody works with, or you're doing all electronically now. But that's what gets all the pieces working together in the band. Now, look at the world that we live in. The world that we live in, if it was a band, would have been blown up on stage by now, because the band of the world is not tight. You can say, you know, you got 100 different, you got 10 instruments and they're all playing a different song, and we live in that, and it doesn't feel harmonious.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about him, or we talk about a Skip Mayhawk or Denny Morisseau, that just kind of, say, when you hang out with people in this vibe, also more is just revealed just by talking and sharing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So So yeah, maybe that is what it's about.
So what's the song that unites everyone? And I think it's the song of nature. It's the song of the earth, and it's been playing forever. And if we can tap into that, it just feels right, and it's not too hard to do because it's always there. It's what's feeding us and holding us and giving us water and giving us air and the seasons are always there reminding us. We can see the season shift. We can celebrate that, what it brings, the medicine that it brings.
And there's no download fee. There's no copyright.
It's not corporate
owned. It's like instantly, permanently accessible. You just plug in and listen.
And Martin Prechtel, the Mayan shaman.
I know who he is.
He's amazing. He says, if you want to know what the song is, in so many words, he says, look at what the mothers and children are doing. What do the mothers and children need? And that's what we serve as well.
I had this amazing awareness yesterday in my meditation. I had a reasonably unhappy childhood, and my mother was an alcoholic, and I was abused. But she's been dead now for 10 or 11 years, and as I've been going deeper into the meditations and working on the land, it's amazing the insights that come to me while I'm out there working with the plants. It's like all the plants are like trying to throw, hey, think about this, hey, think about that.
Uh-huh.
But
beautiful.
I was worried about healing me. In other words, whatever was wrong in my spirituality or, you know, where I was. But because my belief is the evolution that's upon us right now. We will not be able to take fear or resentment with us. That'll be the anchor that separates. You live from love. You make the evolution. But all of a sudden, my mom popped into my head. And I was told that I have some huge healings that are underway right now. And it occurred to me that I wanted my mother to heal, and then flash, I had the insight. Because of the circular relationship, my mother couldn't be healed until I was healed.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be healed until my mother was healed. Now, if we take that from my personal small mother to our relationship as a species with our Mother Earth, we are an unbelievably distressed, ill, sick civilization wanting to get better, to achieve peace and happiness and to feel good about living again. But that healing that we so seek will not come until our Mother Earth is healed as well, and it's so perfectly circular.
Yeah. And we're an incredibly blessed people who have been given a bounty on this earth. I mean, there's a lot of different ways of looking at it, and I want to recognize the changes we need to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be really clear that things are not ideal for much of humanity.
No, we all acknowledge that.
And all the living things. And I'm so grateful for the gifts that we do have, and it's so rich. And, you know, the blackberries are blossoming, and the raspberries are fat on the bushes, and it's amazing to be in this body and to be alive. And so there sure is a balance to dance, isn't there, between recognizing the pain and embracing the joy that is.
If you look at First Peoples' wisdom, at their spiritual knowing, there's nothing out of balance with this at all. Because what all indigenous peoples, all indigenous teachings that I've ever become aware of say is that we come many times. And we come in many forms to learn many lessons. Everything always comes out okay in the end, because from whether it be from the Hopi, the Anasazi, whoever, all of this, the only thing that's real is love.
Yeah.
Okay? So it all has to work out in the end. But then you have to acknowledge the changes that are foretold in every one of the prophecies, but also even in the Christian religion. You factor in, you explain things like a rapture, maybe understood in a different way. But, you know, it's like a lot of this truth has been seen through a glass darkly for many, many centuries. We have felt the truth of it. But what I sense now coming through both in the actual life that I live, but in the music and the art I hear being created, there's a focus coming to this.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on. Your eyes kind of lit up when I said that. What did that bring up?
It reminded me, we heard Esalen People, my song earlier, and when I focus on my relationship to land and spirit of the land and acknowledge the spirits of the land, then I feel healthy and whole. I feel grounded. I feel a purpose that's beyond me, that's simple and natural, and I get songs. I get great songs.
Yeah.
You know, it was my relationship with the land in Big Sur, living at Esalen Institute, that land where the Esalen indigenous people used to go and bury their dead and do ceremony and sit in the hot spring water that come out there. It was my relationship with that land that gave me those songs, and I developed my relationship by dropping a little tobacco and saying hello to the spirits. I recognize that you're here. I recognize you've been here for a long time, and thank you. Thank you that I get to be here now. And my relationship also developed by, when I heard that was a burial ground, it didn't scare me, it didn't weird me out, it gave me an opportunity to recognize the spirits that were there. Oh, how beautiful. How beautiful. And like you said, it's all about love. And for me, that translates to, in our lives, it's all about good relations. And that's what I want to tell the people who are still learning to have their businesses run from the heart, is remember, it's all about good relations.
Dmitry Orlov has been a frequent guest on the show. Is from Russia, and he wrote this amazing series many years ago that made him legendary, and he's still producing beautiful, beautiful stuff. But he had this thing that helped the Russian people survive the collapse of the Soviet Union. I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but the word was spelled B-L-A-T, blot, or something like that, which was like paying it forward. It was like creating social capital through acts of love and sharing, which has been really, I think, an integral part of the transition movement since the peak oilers, since it sprang out of the peak oil movement. And it's an essential part of understanding and maybe completing the mission that I've been on for so many years now, which was, first of all, and foremost, to make people aware of what was happening. Well, I've done everything I can do on that front, and we have reached millions of people, and we still are today around the world, but also to try to provide to them through this show and through CollapseNet and whatever else I might be doing, ways for them to get through this transition. And what this whole show tonight with you, Diane Patterson, I've been spending 1 hour showing people how I take care of myself. I do it by hanging with people like you. I do it by talking about stuff like this, but much more, I do it by walking the walk. And Diane Patterson, you walk the walk, babe. Mm. You kick ass. You make some dynamite music. We're going to go over to a party for Al Torrey's birthday after a while. And we're going to stay in this vibe for a while, because there are those of us who believe and those of us who know that by living this way, we are making that mess out there a little better. And it all fits together. Just hope for the point when your left brain and your right brain both see everything the same way. When that happens, you know you've got it right, that you have it right. And, of course, we'll be here to report on that on our next episode of the Lifeboat Hour. I'll see you next week, everybody.